it's another edition of Library Guys
and Gals
Go to the Movies. I find your lack of faith disturbing.
Hey, thanks everybody for tuning in for the February edition of Library Guys Go to the Movies. Today we're going to talk with Via and Katie. Katie is from our Orange Branch and she's the Adult Services Manager. And Via works at the main branch in Delaware and she's a Library Associate. They are both movie geeks, movie aficionados, whatever you want to call it, movie nerds. They love movies and they like to talk about them. This also serves as a transitional episode as I will be leaving the library because I've accepted a position with Plain City Public Library in Plain City. So Via and Katie will now be your new hosts and we are rebranding the episode Library Guys and Gals Go to the Movies. Katie, Via, would you like to do a little introduction yourself and tell the audience about your love for movies and that sort of thing?
Sure. Yeah, I'm Via. And first, congratulations again to Luke on his new job. I hope that we can do you justice in the podcast. I don't even know when the sort of explosion of my movie love and movie buffness, you know, looking up all the trivia came. I have a cousin who does video production and who's very into it. So I probably learned to dig more into things with him. But I am a horror fanatic. That's my main genre is I will watch pretty much any horror movie, bad or good, and give it a shot. I love, you know, the B-level horror movies. So that's why the one we're going to talk about today is excellent. I'm big into sci-fi and fantasy, that kind of stuff. But I love movies because people think that people that work at a library have all the time in the world to read. No, it must be such a great job. You get to read all the time. And that is not the case. I don't read that often. I wish I could read more. I'm also a very slow reader. So movies are kind of that other area where I can get a cool story and watch it in a shorter amount of time. And if it's particularly bad, I cannot feel as bad wasting so much time on it, but it's still fun to talk about. So some of my favorite movies are The Howling, Nightmare on Elm Street, I love Pan's Labyrinth, Princess Bride. I'll watch the majority of anything, but yeah, I really love Mel Brooks films. I like a few musicals, so I'm kind of all over the place, but I always come back to my speculative fiction dramas.
Do you have, you said you're a horror fanatic or you like horror movies. Is there a certain era of horror that you particularly drawn to?
Yes, I absolutely love 70s and 80s horror movies. The 90s have their place. They have some really great ones like Ginger Snaps and things like that. It might be like later in the end. But 70s and 80s, I'm a huge fan of because I have always loved practical effects way more than CGI. And so you're still using like the, you know, John Carpenter kind of very creepy, very intensive and long hour laboring work to make these amazing creatures that just creep me out in the way that they're built and the way that their movement is. That can't be captured by CGI. There's still some great CGI and some great horror movies today, but there's just that sweet spot that really gets what I think is creepy. So definitely that.
Oh, for sure. And I will tell you one of the stupid nerdy facts that I read just this morning about Tourist Trap is that they really wanted to get John Carpenter to direct this movie.
Oh.
And they absolutely could not afford John Carpenter.
I can see that. And anybody who watches it will probably see that.
And I think probably this was just after Halloween. I believe it was just Halloween. It had already hit and become a huge success. Do you have a favorite horror movie of all time? Or mine always changes, but well, it actually doesn't. I'll just state for the fact that the greatest horror movie ever made is the original Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Okay.
And absolutely no sequels or remakes ever come close to it, but they try and try and try.
Yeah, the original is definitely the best out of all of those. I will not. There are, I will say, there are some horror movies that I'm probably unfair to where I won't even touch if they like redo it or anything like that. There are a couple that I will like. One that the first one that comes to mind is I'm also a big fan of Suspiria. The new remake of that, actually, I was shocked that I thought was incredible and kind of took that on a new thing. But I actually already mentioned my favorite. It's The Howling. So
The Howling.
Yeah. Big werewolf fan. Need more of those. More of the, and some of them, a lot of them are bad, but we need more werewolf movies and we need more like really good ones too.
Do you like American Werewolf in London?
I do. Oh yeah, of course. Of course. Yeah.
How about you, Katie?
So this is just like the most fun because now I'm getting to know Via better than I have before. And we have such similar taste in movies. This is going to be a big day.
This is, I figured this and that's why I suggested you guys. I thought like, it would really work. So, and I have my full faith is in you. And I think you guys are going to do a fantastic job.
Awesome. So my love for movies also goes back way back in time. I was just thinking about my first ever AOL username, which I was able to claim in the early 90s was actually Movie Buff KT.
Yeah.
So that's how I have branded myself in the internet. I definitely have fallen into horror movies recently. My boyfriend is a huge horror movie fan and has expanded my horizons of horror movies. So where I would have said at one point I was, you know, kind of a fan of all genres, horror has come to the top of my list recently. I also really like comedies. I'm a huge fan of the whole Christopher Guest lineup.
Oh, yes, yes.
Best in Show is a movie that I will watch anytime it's on.
That is, I love Best in Show.
Such a good movie.
That's the best. I think that's of all of his movies, and of course, they're all good, but that one, like,
it's so good.
Subject matter is perfect for it.
It's absolutely perfect. Just as a dog person and a ridiculous comedy person, I love it so much. We've recently been going through a Coen Brothers movie rewatch as well. So that is a genre I'm a huge fan of, where kind of the almost magical realism of movies like Oh Brother, Where Art Thou? Even the Hudsucker Proxy, which when I saw it the first time, I did not care for it. And on a revisit as an adult, I thought it was an excellent movie and deserves a rewatch if you didn't like it the first time. Raising Arizona stands high on my list of favorite movies.
That to me is that's the best Nicolas Cage will ever be in his life.
Of course. Yeah.
100%. Oh my gosh, he's so fantastic. But my favorite movie of all time is, as evidenced by what I'm going to pull out from my desk as a prop, is Jaws. I think Jaws is just hands down my favorite movie because it's got a little bit of everything. It's a little funny. It's creepy. You barely ever see the monster. And it's obviously iconic in the world of filmmaking. And I love that movie so much.
My wife and her sister absolutely love Jaws as well. And for the longest time, I was anti-Steven Spielberg. I just had a thing, like...
I had a period of that, too. I totally understand that.
Yeah, he's just been so like such a big icon. I just tend to be like, oh, that, you know, whatever's like big and popular, I like now.
Yeah. You're like, there's more than Steven Spielberg, right. Guys. Come on.
And I always, like, whenever she would mention how great Jaws was, I would be like, what about Jaws 3? That one was at SeaWorld. Because when I was a kid, SeaWorld, there was a SeaWorld in Ohio. And so I was like, oh, I can relate to this. Like,
the scene in Jaws 3 where the shark is like swimming over the like view walkthrough that's under the ocean is one of the scariest and ridiculous things I've ever seen.
So do you think, because both of the movies you mentioned, do you think it's way better to not show like a monster or like a villain a ton, or like maybe not even show it fully at all? Or what are your opinions on that?
I love leaving a lot to the imagination. I also think having a musical score that lives up to the hype of the movie is huge.
Oh, yeah.
What about you?
Yeah, I agree. I think that there are certain movies where when the creature reveal or, you know, killer reveal is done, it's done so well that it's just like, oh my God. One of the ones that I think does that well is they made a Netflix version of this. It's based on a book called The Right. And that's the wrong movie. That's with Anthony Hopkins. The Ritual is what I'm thinking of on Netflix. Yes. And the creature reveal, I won't spoil it a ton because I think that people need to super watch it. But the creature reveal is so incredible. It reminded me a little bit of like Guillermo del Toro Creatures, but with the vibe around it, it's so freaking creepy. And just, it was just amazing. We were just like super freaked out, but at the same time, we were just like, it's so pretty. So.
And they don't show the creature very long in that movie, do they?
It's like kind one of beautiful segment, like one really good shot, and then like just a segment of stuff like around that time, but it's like near the end. But yeah, most of the time I think that it definitely is better to not show a ton of the creature. I think that the imagination thing is way creepier. I think that we create things way worse than people can make on screen anyway. And I think that at least with the era that I love the most, I think that with the limitations, especially of some like indie movie creators or people that have lower budgets, that saves them and it can make their movie 10 times better because they don't have to reveal everything and kind of show like, oh, this is a puppet on a stick. Like,
And I'm also, in terms of horror, I'm also a huge fan of realism in horror. So more of the stalker, serial killer, real life, dark things. Less supernatural. So like I just watched, and I don't know if either of you have seen Very Dark Times on Shudder.
Not yet, no.
It is a group of boys in high school in the 90s, and one of them has an older brother who is in the Marines, and they go into his bedroom and find a samurai sword and decide to start playing with it.
Oh, I watched just the trailer for it the other day.
It's so good, but it's hard to watch, but I highly recommend it.
I will have to look into that.
Yes. But I definitely get scared by supernatural things for sure. But my sort of wheelhouse is, oh, this could actually happen. Like these are real things and that's real scary.
Right.
That's like not any of the sequels because I don't even know what they're like. I'm just waiting for them to have one in space. Like they did with Jason, but the Purge movies, when the preview for the first Purge came out, I was like, I'm not touching this. Like this looks too real. Like there's no way I can watch this and not be super freaked out. And now it's like, I feel like with all the sequels, they've kind of like, it doesn't feel as intimidating as well as more as like over the top that it feels now. But I don't know. The first one might still be freaky. So maybe I'll end up watching it one day. But
yeah, there's like a sweet spot in there for me, like where I want it to be somewhat realistic, but if it's too realistic, it just is depressing. Like to see, you know, it's like, this is really what humans do. Like, so some things I do actually do end up turning off as much as I love the horror genre. If it's too real, you know, it's not entertaining.
Yeah.
I think there can be like, yeah. I mean, I think that that horror films can be great in like trying to make a message that makes you not happy after you've watched something, but it's definitely like whatever mood you're in. Like one of them that I thought was a fantastic film, but like, I don't know if I want to recommend it to many people unless they're in the right mood is The Lodge, which is a newer movie. Have you guys seen that?
Yes.
Okay. It was not what I expected. I went in thinking it was going to be a very trippy, maybe even a little bit like David Lynch, like Lynchian kind of a movie that just was like, that really played with my head. And it did play with my head and it kept me guessing. And I don't know if for some people they would be like, oh, we saw this a mile away, but the turns of the story, I always hate saying like the twist because I don't know. I feel like that's been that phrase has been damaged over time now.
In Night Shyamalan, he likes the twist, right?
It's like a joke of it, but there's a twist. But yeah, like the different turns of the movie, like just shocked me. And when I was done watching it, I was just kind of like, well, that put me in a mood that I was not planning on being today. So yes, I'm going to put a trigger warning on The Lodge, but it is a very incredible movie.
Yeah, that one definitely goes places I wasn't expecting. I have a list of movies that I like to watch or I have set aside to watch during certain times of the year. And that one is a snowed-in movie. So, you know, this time of year when it's like there's nothing but snow, there's nothing to do, that definitely fits the bill of being snowed in. But you've got to be prepared for what isolation does to people.
It's almost too real.
Too real is absolutely right. Yeah.
Since we are, since we kind of went onto that subject of isolation and snow, which is kind of natural for right now, like how it is outside right exactly this moment. How do you feel about Stanley Kubrick's The Shining? Because that's also up there. And I almost annually watch it, actually. It's up there in one of my favorite horror movies. But people sometimes think it's too artsy or notoriously Stephen King himself doesn't like the film, didn't like what Kubrick did with it. He even made a terrible remake, made for TV remake. Like, how can you touch that film? But what do you guys think about that one?
Yeah, respect to Stephen King, but I love the Stanley Kubrick one. I think it's a classic. It doesn't get me in like the isolation scare as much as other movies, but that scene, but it definitely tenses me. Like the whole movie makes me tense, and you know, Jack Nicholson alone, just everything he does in that, like, even before he's really gone off the deep end, he just freaks me out. Like he's a very predictable person, like actor in everything he chooses. But the ending, you know, when they're running through the maze at the end and that kind of claustrophobia and the snow shots, like that part always freaks me out in like the best isolation sense.
That is definitely a movie I can watch time and again, you know, like it can end and I can start watching it over again. The as a Kubrick movie, the production value of that movie just blew me away. The hotel is amazing. Like they really go from like this vast space to getting more and more enclosed as the movie goes on, which I think is incredible. But there are so many details in that movie that I'm just like, this is done so perfectly. I love it. I love it so much. I think it's amazing. But it's also a movie that, aside from a few scenes, doesn't scare me. The twins and the elevator of blood, that's really creepy. And the scene of the woman in the bathtub is probably one of the most horrifying things I've ever seen.
Oh yeah.
But I never think of it as it's not something I think of as a straight up horror movie, but I guess I wouldn't really know how else to describe it, but I do. I love it. I think it's a great
film. The interior of it, it made that carpet pattern like famous. You know, you can't look at anything similar to that without thinking of The Shining. And I don't know, maybe I'm wrong, but did Mandy, I think Mandy told me at one point, do you guys have pillows or something in your house that are those?
Yeah, we have pillows that have the carpet pattern.
That's awesome.
Yeah, for our couch. So I see it every day.
We have those too. We also have those on our couch. Well, it's funny. I was shopping for, we need a new doormat in our front entryway. And the very first thing I looked up was Shining Carpet Doormat. They are wildly expensive, but yeah. I would like to know what other movies you guys like that are like shut-in or isolation horror movies. I am a huge fan of The Thing, watching The Thing when it's...
Oh, yeah.
That movie is, at least as of now, I have not found something that has replaced it, but I think to me that is the scariest movie I have ever seen. Like I'm really weird with body horror is something that as a werewolf lover, like I should be like, yay, body horror. But it is like one of the things that most terrifies me. That and like Lovecraftian cosmic horror stuff are, you know, the thing that I like become obsessed with and looking in for movies or video games or anything like that. But also it's what terrifies me the most. So yeah, The Thing I do not watch very often, but it is incredible.
Hello, this is Katie. I'm jumping in here to say that, sadly, as Luke, Via, and I were talking over more of our favorite movies, our audio cut out, so we lost part of the show. It's really too bad because we had a lot of fun things to say. But we're happy to be taking over the show from Luke. We appreciate all the work he's put into this podcast, and we hope to be hearing from him again soon. Now enjoy Katie and Via talking about Tourist Trap. It's a trip.
Yeah, I will attempt to give a quick synopsis of what Tourist Trap is about, because it has almost everything in it, it seems like. Basically, Tourist Trap is about that stereotypical group of friends who are going on a little road trip, and one of them has car trouble, and so they find this off-the-highway tourist attraction, and this guy says he's going to help them fix their car, and they get pulled into a crazy situation with this museum, this tourist museum that is full of mannequins. So obviously that is fun for the whole family and not going to be creepy or end badly at all. But yes, and insanity and scares ensue, and some things that are supposed to be scary that just make you laugh your head off. And yes, it is considered a slasher film. So it's a very, it's I guess I read that it was the only slasher film in film history to receive a PG rating.
Nice. So, awesome.
Yeah. So yeah, that's the general gist of what it is. But there is so much more that happens, and we are going to talk about that. obviously, if you're listening to a podcast about a movie, expect spoilers. So don't listen to this if you have not seen Tourist Trap, or if you just want to know every little bit about it, because it's going to make you want to watch it even more, because I think that it would for this movie. I wouldn't mind if I went in. I think learning about it would make me want to go in more than going in blind, either way. But I think it's more fun.
So I think so this was my first time watching this movie, and I will 100% say this was not something I had ever heard of, nor something I would have picked up if I were browsing for something until I saw the cover. And when I saw the cover, I was like, you know, that's actually incredibly creepy. The cover has this mannequin face kind of over another person's face, and there are these just dead eyes looking directly into your soul, and it is just extra creepy. It really it drew me in from the get-go, for sure.
Yeah, the some of my favorite movie covers are the 60s, 70s, and 80s covers, because sort of like the horror and fantasy novels that are from that time, they really exaggerate and get really crazy and sometimes like psychedelic with the art. And it's just so much fun to look at. It definitely pulls you in. I found out about this movie. I do like deep dives of movies sometimes, like a certain genre of movie, to like learn more of ones I haven't seen, especially in genres that I really love, because eventually you've seen so many of them, you have to start getting like trying to find the really weird ones or the really indie ones. And so I saw the trailer. It was the first introduction I had to this, and that's how I introduced people to it. It's just a bunch of mannequins with their mouths dropping open, and sometimes they sound like they're singing, and people screaming from and trying to get away from mannequins, and it just looks like a lot of fun. And so I had that kind of in the back of my head, and then working at the library is the first time I saw it in physical form, and I could not believe that we had it. And so I was like, that's it. Like, I saw the cover as well, and I was like, that's it. Like, I have to watch this. Like, this is a sign. So, you know, thank you, library. You have fulfilled one of my needs in fantastic, in quotes, fantastic film.
Excellent collection development, library. We've got an oddball in our collection, and now it's one you all need to use your library card to seek this one out. I'm returning it from home. I have it checked out myself, and you got to get yourself on the list for this one, because it was a trip.
Yes.
The thing that I keep coming back to about this movie that I cannot figure out is what was real and what was not.
Yeah.
This supernatural element just boggled my mind because they never quite committed one way or the other if the mannequins were actually the embodiment of real people, or was someone going crazy and thinking they were real, or was that mannequin just coming to life? I kind of love that.
Yeah, I didn't remember how much they did that until the very end near the film, because one of the crazy things about this movie is that the villain not only fakes having an evil brother, but then we find out he has telekinetic powers, because it's not good enough just to have a crazy mannequin creating man who faked an evil brother. So once you find that out, I thought, you know, that's how all the mannequins are moving. It's just him using his telekinetic powers. And then there's this weird mention near the end of like, they're all real people. And then the part of the movie that drove me the craziest was right near the end, a friend that one of the groups of the I guess, I don't know if they're teens or young adults, whatever they're supposed to be playing, but the group of friends that get there, one of them comes to rescue one of the girlfriends who has been kidnapped by the owner of the museum. And then all of a sudden, the tourist trap owner, his name is Mr. Schlossen. He owns the place is called the Lost Oasis. It's called Schlossen's Lost Oasis. So try to say that over and over again. That is a horrible,
the worst
sounding name. Like, they could have just called it Lost Oasis, Schlossen's, but he lost. Didn't. He has a terrible last name for a place. But yeah, so Mr. Schlossen walks over to her friend who is rescuing her and just pulls his arm and his head off.
Like, wait, he was real.
It's not even gory. It's not a gory scene. It's literally, he's just like, oh, surprise, he's been a mannequin. And then we're like, for how long? And just like, he just pops them off. And you're like, wait a second, how long? Why does he look so realistic? This is clearly more advanced than any of the other mannequins.
Right, and there was another scene that had the same impact on me where I was just really intrigued by it, because there are two friends who are trying to sneak out of the house, and they have to go past a doorway where Mr. Schlossen is dressed as a child mannequin and playing with some dolls, and they have to sneak by, and he kind of catches them out of the corner of his eye, and they freeze amongst many other mannequins and pretend to be mannequins. And I'm thinking, like, he lives here and he made all of those. So how would you think that he wouldn't know that you were real? But it works, and they're able to hide and freeze and pretend they're mannequins just like all the other ones. So his grasp on what is real and what isn't really affects the outcome of this movie in a hysterical way.
I feel like that was just one of those like classic Scooby-Doo kind of hiding hijinks that they threw in there, you know, for the time period. But that scene was, there were legitimately some creepy scenes. I wouldn't say the movie like scared me at any time, but there were some very creepy scenes, and that was one of them to me. Him, because also in the room when he's kind of dressed up as the like little girl playing with the dolls, he looks very creepy. He's also making this old woman mannequin in a rocking chair rock back and forth with his mind powers. Ooh. Describing this movie is so funny.
It's so weird.
But yeah, it is very creepy. But yeah, some of the other scares, the first 5 to 10 minutes, the scares already really start to ramp up. We get our first kill in that amount of time. And one of the friends goes into a gas station because he's the one that has car trouble, and he walks into this room and sees this person. It's funny at first. He sees this person like laying on the floor, and he goes over to them because he's just looking for somebody, and he turns it around and it's a mannequin. But then a bunch of mannequins start popping out and laughing, and you know, it's actually, you know, it's over the top, so it's not super scary. It's pretty laughable. But then you start seeing all of these objects in this cupboard and all around the room start moving by themselves. Once you learn about the telekinetic powers, that all the way in the front makes sense suddenly, but it does a really good foreshadowing in that scene because it keeps going back to this pipe on the floor that's rattling. And then finally the guy gets locked in and the pipe lifts up and it stabs him in the back. And then in true use of the weapon, you see like blood coming out of the tube, and it's an effective kill scene. Like if it was in like a really well done horror movie that sadly wasn't like B-level laughable, it would be an effective horror scene. So I enjoyed that scene a lot. Yeah, I don't know. What was one of your favorite or like most memorable scenes?
Those mannequins that jump out in the beginning, the one that's like kind of giggle laughing like a clown in the
scene. Oh, yeah. It even has a face that's really like crinkled up clown. Yeah.
I was so like, the thing that's funny to me in this movie was that there are like three very different types of mannequins. Mm-hmm. There are the ones in the beginning that are weird and set up this very bizarre, like things are going to pop out at you all the time and laugh and have creepy faces. And then you have the wax museum figures that are General Custer and Daniel Boone, and they shoot at you and they look like they're just kind of there as a roadside attraction, which is what they're expecting. Mm-hmm. And then you end up with these bizarre department store mannequins that look like people and they have clothes on. And then you have this horrifying mannequin mask on top of all of that that our killer dons whenever he is stalking the teens. And so the combo, like, they never did stick with just one mannequin. Mm-mm. They found several different kinds to make them insanely creepy. I have to say, though, my favorite part of this movie is not the mannequins themselves, but the insane soundtrack.
It's a good soundtrack.
The music is absolutely incongruous. Like, it's a kind of like a calliope sound almost the entire time, and it doesn't have the same foreboding like psycho slasher sound, so you feel like you should kind of be enjoying it, but it's also really catchy and it gets into your brain as if you're on a carousel and these little mannequins are just kind of closing in on you.
Yeah, I had seen the film once before. Me and a friend did a bad movie night, and we watched this one and Burnt Offerings, which I was the first time I'd ever seen Burnt Offerings. I don't know if you've seen that one, but I actually really liked it. I was like, this is not as cheesy as you claimed this was. I was like, it was a good like older 70s movie. But so I watched it this time with my brother because he'd never seen it. And right when that intro music starts playing, we were just like, what? I don't remember it being like this. But yeah, it's a fun ride. I wanted to know your opinion. One of the other is it real, is it magic kind of things is there's a very special mannequin that he has in the museum, and it's this beautiful woman who's more in line with like the like retail fashion store type mannequins, and she's in this long pretty white dress. And she's in her own exhibit that's just like this archway with all these beautiful lights. And when you walk up to her, they come on and this like twinkly little music box song plays. And we find out that it looks just like a picture of his real wife. And he says that he made it like in memory of her. But then later in the movie, when one of the girls has been like knocked unconscious and gets brought somewhere, she in a half awake state sees a woman bend over her and sort of it sort of appears like she's kind of being like a guardian angel kind of figure, like, wake up, it's okay, like, you're not ready to die yet. But she just kind of comes in that haze and then you don't ever see her again. And then there's a part at the very end when her mannequin is in the attic and Mr. Schlossen, mask killer face man, starts dancing with her. And as they're dancing, this same girl who's been brought up to the attic sees that occasionally when he spins with her, she becomes a real woman and she kind of laughs. And it to me, it felt a little bit like antagonistic. It didn't seem like she was like helpful in that moment. But I wanted to know, like, what do you think that was? Like, do you think that the person that visited her in her like hazy dream state was the same woman? Or do you even think that was her wife? Or
I think it still was a mannequin, and I think that that girl was completely detached from reality. She has this moment of, they kind of set it up so that she's been unconscious, she is having these fever dreams, she's all sweaty, and then this woman kind of props her up and gives her a drink of water, checks in on her, and she does act as a guardian angel, but I do think that the majority of that is hallucination, that she remembers this woman that looked just like his wife, because they steal a photo album off of his desk and start going through it. So I think most of it was her bonkers fever dream, which, you know, it doesn't make it any less creepy that this thing came to life in her head and he's dancing with it. But, you know, then they do all that thing, like you said, with them pulling the arm and head off of that other mannequin that had seconds before been a real person.
I have no idea what I just went with that. I'm not even going to try to attempt to be like, what do I think that is?
It's so true. It's like, I really don't know what's happening here, but I'm going to go with it because these mannequins are creepy and I'm just going to keep enjoying that part.
Yeah. And the guy that played, the guy who plays Mr. Schlossen is really good at being so over the top. I mean, if you're going to make a movie that has those elements in it, that's a pretty good one. It's Chuck Connors is his name. And yeah, just his facial expressions, the way he talks, especially the way the voice he gives his like fake evil brother, where he starts talking like really gruff and like raspy. He's just got all the over the top cartoony villain qualities that are perfect for that.
Yes, definitely. Well, and it's funny. So I'm looking on his Wikipedia page here, and apparently he played the Rifleman on the series.
Oh, okay. Know.
So he's kind of, and he does have this Western look about him. He kind of mm-hmm. has a cowboy feature, which fits in well too with the mostly yeah. Wild West theme to the wax museum as a roadside attraction. And he's great. I mean, his haircut, his clothes, the way that he acts is really creepy. That made me just think though of another scene that I was completely baffled by, which was when he sits down to have a meal with one of the mannequins.
Oh yeah.
And they're eating soup and he's trying to get this mannequin to eat soup and then has it respond that the soup tastes good. Yeah, it's good. Good soup. Need some crackers. And I was like, what is happening?
I would chalk that up just to again, he's lost it. And that's one of those moments, because at first, like it kept changing my mind about what was actually happening and what was not. Like at first I was like, oh, wait a second. Like maybe his brother is real. And then I was like, oh no. Cause he just made him talk. Like he's not real. He's just pretending his brother is like really up there. So yeah, my best advice is to have huge suspension of disbelief when you go in watching this movie, and it'll be a much better time. Just laugh at it and be like, oh, that tourist trap.
Yes, exactly. It's your classic B movie. You cannot have high expectations, so then you'll be pleasantly surprised.
Yes. And one of the best shots in the movie is the very last one, which is another yes. like confirmation that our final girl in it has just gone nuts. I think you're probably right about the just hallucination of everything. Is you see her just like the very last shot is apparently she's escaped and she's in her car and I guess it's been fixed. They don't talk about any of that, but the car works. So it's just, it's been fixed. Apparently he really actually did it. So, I mean, like, I guess good job, Mr. Schlossen. You actually came through on fixing the car before you murdered everybody. But she's in it. And then in all, like the passenger in the back seat, you just see her three friends with her and they're all mannequins and she's just driving away with them.
And she looks happy as could be. Like, I got my buddies back. I'm driving on to wherever we were headed. And look at my cool friends. And yep, they're all mannequins.
Look at my cool plastic friends.
It's so great.
Yeah, I don't know if she believes, again, I don't know what happened to her friend and the arms and the head pulling off. But I don't know if she believes that, like, she can change them back at some point because of that. Or if she's just like, those are her friends and maybe she saw them come to life and be who they really were too, because she's gone insane like she did with the wife or something. I don't know, but I see that girl's future having a lot of therapy. Yeah.
A lot of feeding soup to mannequins. Yes.
Yeah. She's just going to be like in the park with her friends, like set up on a bench, like people walking by.
Just hanging out. And I mean, you know, that's hard enough to do with one mannequin. Can you imagine doing it with all three of them?
Three of them. Yeah. I'm picturing movies like Lars and the Real Girl and like the movie mannequin from like the '80s, like the rom-com mannequin. Yes. Like just trying to think about all of the lifting up the arms and like trying to get them on tables.
All of the other mannequin related cinema out there. This fits right in. Yes.
It has its own genre. Absolutely. We didn't even realize that we wanted it. And the movie is a trip. And actually, I read that apparently Stephen King loves this movie. In his nonfiction book, Dance Macabre, he talks about it was one of the films when he was a kid that scared him the most. And so he thinks very highly of it still to this day. So I love that. I love that he can appreciate a good B-level movie. And of course, you know, it's one of the kings of horror himself. So if you don't take our word for it, take Stephen King's. He says, watch Tourist Trap.
Exactly. So I'm assuming I know the answer to this, but would you recommend Tourist Trap to our patrons?
Oh, yes. With 100% of my being, I would. Because we're not trying to hide that it is a zany, nonsensical, like, if you're looking for great cinema, like deep thinking cinema, this is not it. We are fully open about our equal love for the deep thinking films that are on the like Criterion list, you know, and our love for this, which is the exact opposite.
Yes. All right. So I think we're going to give this one 10 plaster thumbs up.
Beautiful. Yes. Yes, we do. I was going to say I was trying to keep a tally when I watched it of like creepy moments to funny moments. And one of the other really creepy scenes that I was thinking of is the guy kidnaps a bunch of them down in his basement. And one of the girls, he lays on a table, he puts a leather strap over her forehead, and then he covers her face in plaster. And that scene was so tense for me, because even though I knew what was going to happen, those scenes always really get to me. And it was another really effective one, I thought, for the type of movie it is. He just like slowly takes the plaster and is covering her face. And, you know, it's right when he covers her mouth, even when her nose, her nostrils are the last thing to cover up, she can still breathe out of those, but he covers over her mouth. And that's just when I'm like, it's like when people do like underwater scenes and I find myself like holding my breath with them until they get out, like making sure they're okay. And so that was another really freaky and effective scene. And then one of the funniest scenes to me is when one of them, I believe it's the same girl that escapes and kind of goes crazy in the end, followed from Mannequin Friends, but she's running through the woods, being chased by the masked killer, and he's holding one of her friends. This is the part that I wasn't totally sure about. So when we first see this masked killer, he has a mask on, but part of me wondered if it was a mask or if it was actually somebody's face, because he has the same hat that the first guy has that died. He has it on, and he has like his hair kind of too. So I don't know if he just made himself look like him or if it like he actually took part of the guy. But anyway, later in the movie, he has that guy's head and he's running around with it, chasing people. And the guy's, the mannequin head's mouth just drops open and is like, ah, it just starts yelling. And it's the funniest thing I have seen. And he's just running through the woods. You know, he might as well have like the head might as well be like a coconut that he carved a face into, and he's just running around, and every so often it drops its mouth and just goes, ah.
And those, they add screams into each of those. Anytime a mannequin mouth opens, like they all look like they've been altered to just have a jaw, which mannequins don't normally have mouths that open. Yeah. So they've all been altered to kind of scream or sing at you, which no thanks.
Yeah.
No thanks.
That's definitely one of the creepier parts, is like, it's, I think those scenes when all you walk into the, well, we don't, cause we're not going ever to that place.
Nope.
Never. But they walk into the rooms that are just full of mannequins, and then you have like a, you know, a scene or two where just all of them kind of start dropping their mouths a few seconds after another and making the kind of singing sound. And it, there's something so oddly equally creepy and funny about those scenes, because, you know, it would be super unnerving to be in a room like that.
Yeah.
But at the same time, like the sound of their singing is kind of creepy and gets to me still.
Definitely.
Oh, so did you, I don't know how you can like call anything in this movie, but did you ever at one point before finding out the real thing, think you had like, thought like think you knew who the killer was, or did you have like a suspect in the beginning?
I definitely figured, well, I did not figure out that the brother would be the guy, but I did sort of had a suspicion that it was him all the time, because he would disappear and then someone would die and then he'd come back and be like, hey, what happened to your friend? So it's hard to figure out, but because there are so many other wild things going on, that's just one of like figuring out who the killer is just one part of the movie itself, because you're also like, well, maybe a mannequin killed her, I don't know.
Maybe it did happen.
Yeah, the telekinesis adds a whole other element to the outcome, I would say.
Yeah, and I almost, in the very beginning, he's showing them how, like, before any spooky things happen, before he's anywhere near being bad or anything bad happens to anybody, he's showing them how the historical figure, things reenact and move, and you're not really thinking anything of it, because, you know, you've seen stuff that does that, you've seen animatronics, you know, finding out that he has those telekinetic powers, part of me was like, oh, you know, if you frame this movie in a completely different light, this could be some weird, quirky movie about this older guy who has telekinetic powers, who like runs a tourist attraction where he's like controlling all of the things that are interacting with people. Cause that's kind of what was my takeaway from it. I was like, yes, those things like were never like his brother. He said his brother was really good with building mannequins and like installing stuff like that. And in the end, I was kind of just like, I don't think he did any of that. Like, well, obviously his brother's not real, but I was like, I don't think you did any of that. I think you're just moving everything with your mind. And they don't really go any deeper into that. It's just like, oh, you have telekinetic powers? Moving
cool.
on.
Cool.
They don't dig into that at
no,
all.
No, they don't.
No backstory for that at all. This is it's exhausting talking about this movie sometimes. It's like there's always something else you could say about it that you forgot. But I think that's kind of the fun of it, because I think that we tried to touch on some of the bigger, crazier parts for you, but you're still going to go in and you're going to find some line that cracks you up that we didn't talk about, or you're going to find something that's a little bit creepy that we did not discuss. And that should be the enjoyable part, is you're, no matter how much somebody spoils this movie for you, it's never going to completely tell you everything that's going to happen. So
yes,
it's a wild ride. Like we said, we highly recommend it if you're looking for a bad movie night or just something fun to throw in, any time of the year. Doesn't have to be, you know, I think it's horror movie time and Halloween time all year round. So
all year. Absolutely. I could not agree more. Well, if you happen to check out the tourist trap from the library, we definitely want to hear what you think. If you want, you can email us your feedback or suggestions at libraryguys@delawarelibrary.org. I think we might need to make a change to our email address.
I think we will.
We're the library gal.
Yes. But we'd be happy. Handing this over in this episode. Yes. So we will work on that.
We'll work on that. But we've had a great time talking to you all about Tourist Trap. We hope you check it out. Let us know what you think.
Yes, and thanks for listening to us. And next episode, it will be just me and Katie for our first solo episode. And we will very much miss Luke, but we are prepped and ready to go. So listen to us next time.
We'll see you then.
Tune in next time for Library Gals Go to the Movies.
Join us next time for Library Guys Go to the Movies. For more information on any of the films or digital services we've discussed, please visit DelawareLibrary.org.